I had originally planned to dine at Charlie Trotter's restaurant, but it disappeared. Then I had a reservation for Alex, but it too disappeared. So Picasso sounded good. Not one of my favorite painters, but his paintings would not hurt my enjoyment of the food, I thought.
L'art is vicieux.
I was right. As I enter, I'm handed an iPad to order from. I contact a server. Oh, server.
See.
Do I touch the pictures on the iPad, or do I just say what I want?
Say.
Okay. I'll start with the prawns. Then the turbo and the butternut squash soup with the mushrooms.
Soup.
And a side order of artichokes.
A side.
I see you have Spanish cider on the menu.
Cider.
But none of the ciders I had in Spain were any good. I'll have a cocktail. Let me look at your cocktail menu.
Let's see.
I'll go with the Serrano cocktail.
Let's see.
Excuse me, sir. What's your name?
Masai.
I thought it was Mel Blanc. When the amuse bouche arrives, it is suggested I do the quail egg salmon thing as a shot. Actually, it's too hot for that. Like dropping a Guernica on my tongue. The quail egg overwhelmed the salmon. Bad idea. Long, eggy aftertaste.
Yeah.
It then took a while for the butternut soup to kick in. I mistake mushrooms for marshmallows. Both are good, not great.
Serrano cocktail. Sky vodka, Campari, orange juice, limoncello, and lime peel spiral.
The Campari in the cocktail balances the sweetness and really makes the soup.
You might have just invented a new pairing, senor.
Back to the soup. I close my eyes to savor the soup's ingredients, and they are profoundly savored. The purpose of taste A is to combine with taste B and create taste C. This works. The Campari cancels the marshmallows, like death canceling Franco.
Doctors say his condition is unchanged.
And prawns are amazingly bland with all those vegetables. They lack the intensity of the prawn gods from Mix, but what doesn't? Cutting the tomato and combining it with the prawns helps. The third prawn is the best, covered with mushrooms. Exquisite mushroom aftertaste. When I opened my eyes, I was astonished I was still here. I thought I'd gone to food heaven. What I thought were mushrooms were instead intricately prepared artichokes. I do love this vegetable. My side order of artichokes tastes like potatoes.
You say tomato, and I say tomorrow. You say potato, and I say potato.
With the turbo, the asparagus works. Not as soft as I'd prefer, but hot. With the hollandaise sauce and the jus, it's quite successful. The turbo and the asparagus create a tasty synthesis. Am I eating fish, a vegetable, or some creature Picasso has created with a fish head and an asparagus body? Much more enjoyable than any of his paintings. I try the turbo without the asparagus, and my tongue complains, "Hey, where's the asparagus?" Last bite of fish soaked with hollandaise, super buttery. I'm starting to get full on a rather small quantity of food. Must be all that butter. I have to stop before I turn into the spirit of pleasure and float away. Dessert items loom before me like giant Macy's balloons or Don Quixote's windmills. The greatest reaction I had to anything here wasn't the ambience, which is delightful, or any of the fine food. It was from the little book they gave me about the art on the walls. The sheer inventiveness of Picasso and his whole family, like Garnier's approach to the langoustine, endlessly inventive, undeterred by dismal failure. My server had promised me a little fruit plate, and the key word little I took too seriously. Only the sabayon was good and light, made from grapefruit, lemon, lime, and egg whites. As I was leaving the restaurant, Chef Julian appeared.
Did you enjoy your meal, senor?
It was enchanting, just like your restaurant.
Mrs. Picasso personally picked...
A peck of pickled peppers?
Personally.
Not a robot?
All these paintings.
Ouch.
Picked them personally.
Dick, 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 Picasso. Dick, Dick, Picasso.
This is my first time to eat turbo.
It's in the same family as John Dory.
I had John Dory at Garnier's place on Tuesday.
Pierre Garnier is the best chef in Europe.
You're pretty good too, chef.
Gracias, senor.
Walking back to my hotel, I wondered if I was starting to OD on good food. And I still had Keller's cod to eat later that evening. In one of Bourdain's televised trips to Vegas, he raved about the cod at Tommy Keller's Bouchon. I'd had exquisite grapefruit and pretty decent quiche Florentine at Bouchon for breakfast that morning, but the cod wasn't on the breakfast menu. I was told to return in the evening. Back at Bouchon, a couple hours after Picasso, I ordered the brandade, a puree of salt cod and potato, not usually deep fried, but Tommy has invented. Thankfully served with some pieces of tomato. The server comes by with the cookbook and shows me the recipe while I'm eating. I read that brandade was most likely invented by the cooks of Nîmes in Marseille in the 18th century and popularized by a famous French chef named Durand in his cookbook from 1830. Would Durand approve of Keller's iteration? Not even if he had the imagination of Jules Verne could he imagine Las Vegas.
Would you like me to take your picture, monsieur?
No, I'm good, unphotoed. Selfless in a land of selfies. Who does he think I am, Anthony Bourdain? He monitors my dining, insisting I eat the tomato with the brandade, and I'm glad he did, as the tomato mitigates all that deep frying. It's supposed to be an appetizer, but I seek not further appetite. This is my final meal of the day. Bourdain describes Bouchon as an oasis of calm and class and an otherwise cacophonous thunderdome of excess. I don't agree with that, but man, can he write.
This is Richard Fish with this evening's news this evening. Crowds of lawyers in black robes marched from their union to the square, waving Egyptian flags and chanting, "Mubarak, you pilot, how did you get $70 billion?" Referring to the president's past as the Air Force commander. Egyptians have been infuriated by newspaper reports that the Mubarak family has amassed billions and perhaps tens of billions of dollars in wealth, while, according to the World Bank, about 40% of the country's 80 million people live below or near the poverty line of $2 a day. The Associated Press is reporting that a senior army commander has told Egypt protesters that all their demands will be met. Egypt's Supreme Military Council has been meeting and say that the army will issue a communique shortly that will meet the protesters' demands.
If Omar Suleiman takes over from Mubarak, all that will happen is that everyone in Tahrir will rewrite their signs and then carry on demonstrating.
The crowd in Tahrir Square has been chanting, "The army and the people stand together. The army and the people stand united." Egypt's information minister said,
"The president is still in power and he is not stepping down. Everything you've heard in the media is a rumor."
With $1.5 billion in annual aid, the U.S. seems to have a fair amount of leverage over the military and would probably try to ensure that military rule did not last too long. Although Saudi Arabia has said if the U.S. withdraws its aid to pressure Mubarak, the Saudis would replace it.
"I have been dreaming of this moment since I was a child. It's only been a dream until very recently."
Egypt State TV, running now on Egypt is Changing, total about-face, and best pointer yet to the end of Mubarak. President Obama has been speaking.
We want all Egyptians to know America will continue to do everything that we can to support an orderly and genuine transition to democracy in Egypt. We are witnessing history unfolding.
When the Egyptian finance minister was asked if this was a momentous day for Egypt, he said,
"Absolutely. I've always said that these young people, men and women, have blown the whistle. We've ignored them for too long. It's about time we took them seriously, got them to participate."
Thursday evening, President Obama tried to exert more pressure on the Egyptian government.
"Those who have exercised their right to peaceful assembly are broadly representative of Egyptian society. President Hosni Mubarak has not convinced his countrymen that his handover of powers is immediate, meaningful, or significant, and must do more. Too many Egyptians remain unconvinced that the government is serious about a genuine transition to democracy, and it is the responsibility of the government to speak clearly to the Egyptian people and the world. I know that the Egyptian people will persevere, and they must know that they will continue to have a friend in the United States of America."
Fareed Zakaria.
"Isn't that a melodic name? Sounds like a song lyric."
Speaking on cable TV, says Obama's actions are unprecedented for a U.S. president so quickly trying to push an ally out of power.
Fareed Zakaria, save us from Babylon.
He points out that it took Ronald Reagan 3 years to turn against the brutal regime of Ferdinand Marcos in the Philippines, and it took Bill Clinton a year and a half to lever Suharto out of power in Indonesia. Power outages throughout Cairo this evening as President Mubarak delays his departure because, as people in the square surmise,
he's taking a conference call with Kim Jong-il and Robert Mugabe.
He's doing a backup of 30 years in power on floppy disks.
You think it's easy packing gold bullion bars into vintage Louis Vuitton luggage?
Plucking embarrassing nasal hair.
Checking the sofa cushions to make sure he isn't leaving any change behind.
I was awakened with chest pains at 3 a.m. after premonitions of death leaving Picasso. Maybe I actually was dying of too much good food. Maybe that deep-fried cod at Bouchon at 10 p.m.? Or a heart attack? I read for a while as the pain subsides and monitor what's happening in Egypt.
Reuters is reporting that one of the Egyptian opposition parties has pulled out of the talks on reform with the government, saying Hosni Mubarak's administration has not responded to, quote, the minimum level of popular demands, end quote. The Tagamu party is the first group to withdraw from the dialogue, which Omar Suleiman, the vice president, began on Sunday in response to the protests.
"There's no politics in Tahrir Square. Politics is for the regime."
At last, President Mubarak is going to speak. Expectations are running high that he'll announce his resignation.
"I have seen that it is required to delegate the powers and authorities of the president to the vice president. As dictated in the Constitution, I will stay in the country. I am adamant to continue to shoulder my responsibility to protect the Constitution and safeguard the interest of the people. Until power is handed over to those elected in September by the people in free and fair elections, in which all the guarantees of transparencies will be secured. I have lived for this nation. I've exhausted my life defending the land and its sovereignty. I have faced death on many occasions. I've never bent under foreign pressure. I've never sought false power or popularity. We will be dignified until the very end. May God preserve Egypt. May peace be upon you."
Central Cairo was gearing up for the Arab world's biggest street party, and instead, it got yet another slice of Mubarak paternalism, the sort of staid nationalistic rhetoric that most people here tired of many moons ago. Mubarak seems to have totally misjudged the situation. His start, saying he was speaking as a father to his children, was shockingly patronizing.